of Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you listening. And I've got a great guest today. I want to get right into it. Leslie Kane, we've talked before. I interviewed her for the book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. She did a smashing job on that, giving the UFO topic a very credible presentation and some people who needed some, I think, recommendation and maybe some kind of kudos for doing the work that they do and taking no respect from the general public. It's like it turned it around in a lot of ways. And Leslie is the person who helped make that happen. So I just, before we get into this other topic, I wanted to say I really appreciate what you did with that book and that work. And I think it's nice to have you on the scene, you know, kind of getting the dirt beneath the story and saying, hey guys, pay attention. So Leslie.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Wendy. So great to be back on with you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was thrilled when I saw that you took this topic on too, because this is one of those that it's so nice to have somebody who's doing it from the journalist standpoint of going in and saying, well, I need to see a few details. I want some facts. I can't just print it because I believe it. I have to find if there's something credible that gives me some substance for this story. And that's what you tried to do in the new book. And if you haven't heard anything about this yet with the buzz on it, it's Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. And Leslie Kane has done a great job of pulling a whole lot of topics into this. First, what was the hook? Why did you, what got you with this topic?
Well, I'd say it's sort of like the same thing in a way that got me into UFOs, Wendy. It's just like one of the big human questions, you know, that we don't know, have an answer to, but so many people are curious and concerned about it. And I just love taking on things that create a sense of mystery, things that are big questions, questions that challenge the current scientific paradigm that we have of a materialist-based world. And so for all those reasons, it's been something I've been interested in for a really long time. The other thing that happened was a close friend of mine died in 2011, and I was by his bedside and with him when he took his last breath, and it was quite remarkable for me to have the experience of being with a dying person, and that moment of transition when the person stops breathing and suddenly they're no longer there is just an absolutely mind-boggling, almost surreal kind of experience. You just can't fathom what has happened. And I think that was also something that kind of made me start asking a lot more questions.
Now, you also cover mediumship in the book, which would transition with that topic as well. Did you have an experience with your friend afterwards? Did that have any kind of impact?
Yes, actually I did. And, you know, I do write a lot about mediumship, not only studies that have been done on mediumship, but also I write about my own experiences with two very outstanding mental mediums. It just so happened that this friend who died in 2011 did apparently come through the mediums. I mean, they provided an extraordinary amount of very accurate information, some of it personal, a lot of it not known to very many people, if anyone else. And it's just a very startling experience when you have an excellent reading like that. They're not hard, they're not easy to come by. I think I was very fortunate to be with two really, really great mediums. And I spent a lot of time trying to find out who they might be, who the best ones were. So it is, it's very kind of unnerving and awe-inspiring. And, you know, when you have this experience, and, you know, when I started this out, I was a skeptic myself. It's not like I was a believer who wanted to find facts to back up my beliefs. I really didn't know what I was going to find. And I certainly didn't know whether mental mediumship was something viable or not. So I learned a lot. It was a journey, an exploration different from UFOs in that I was able to actually jump in and experience a lot of this stuff for myself as I researched it.
Yeah, the interactive part of it, the paranormal experiences that go along with that, and seeing that happen right in front of you gives you a lot more, I think, appreciation that maybe we don't have all the answers.
That's exactly right. And, you know, with the UFO subject, you can't call in a UFO. I mean, you might see one, you know, if there's witnesses to the phenomenon, but you can't decide you're going to experience it, where a lot of the issues related to the question of survival, you can choose to put yourself directly in contact with it. And one of those things is mediumship. So it is, it's exciting to be able to do that. And as well as looking at the science that's been done, the studies that have been done with mediums under very, very tightly controlled conditions, in which we can see that they are able to produce what they say they can produce. So certainly a small percentage of them. This is not to discount that there are lots of fraudulent or deceived people out there that think they're doing think they're good mediums when they're really not. And it's very hard to find really, really top-notch ones. But when you do, you know, then those are the ones that we need to look at and ask, what's going on? How are they doing it? What does it mean?
Well, and I think that's part of it, too. You have to know the questions to ask and to know that if somebody's giving you a lot of generalities and stuff, they're just kind of doing an assessment and trying to give you what you want to hear rather than something that might be coming through that's a lot more pertinent to the issue at hand.
Exactly right. I mean, you've probably been to some mediums. I can tell by the way you're talking. You probably have. And it's absolutely true. I mean, if you go to a medium and they just tell you things like, oh, your mother loved you very much, or, oh, your mother says you're a very sensitive person, you know, oh, she's doing very well, you know, she's, you know, just vague generalities like that that could apply to anyone. It really doesn't mean anything. I mean, for some people, maybe that's satisfactory. But no, I was looking for very, very specific information. And you need that in order to identify the person that you are being told is there. How are you going to know it's really them unless they can provide you with very specific information to identify themselves? Otherwise, it's not going to mean anything.
I will tell you, and I'm not a professional, I do this occasionally when somebody comes through, and all I say is it's intuitive, it's not psychic, and it's not mediumship. But when a woman had lost her husband, and the information was there, the information that came through that I didn't have because I didn't know her, nor did I know her husband or anything about them, was that it's okay, he's still an atheist. And he, you know, doesn't, yeah. He's in heaven now, or, you know, he's on the other side, but he's still an atheist. That hasn't changed. He said it was a complete surprise, though, so he's still exploring. And she was just, you know, dumbfounded, as was I, because it wasn't something that I had intended to do, but I knew in that moment that there was something that she needed to hear, and he was right there. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll do this and see where it goes. But that,
right. If he had been an atheist, of course that would identify him to her.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. That was the hit. That was the connect she needed to know that this information was legit. Now for me going back, you know, 2 or 3 years later or 2 or 3 days later, it may not have happened the same way. This isn't something I call like a UFO. It's something that's either there or it isn't. And that's the way I work with it. But the people that they deal with in your book, the ones you are talking to, are ones who have been through scientific type scenarios where they are asked to perform a certain exercise, I would call it, on demand. And that's where they say, yes, I can do this, and this is my profession, as opposed to something that just is a happy coincidence.
Right. I mean, the two mediums that I dealt with both have passed. Well, no, actually, it's not true of the second one, but let's look at the first medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. There are two organizations in this country which have testing programs for mediums, and they actually, certify them as genuine certified mediums. But in order to get that status, they have to go through rigorous testing procedures in which they're tightly controlled. And one of the groups called the Winbridge Institute has what they call, it's many, many levels of blinding. It's sort of like when a doctor gives a placebo to somebody, you don't know if you're getting the real pill or not. Well, in these situations, the medium doesn't know the name of the person she's reading for. The person she's reading for isn't even present. She just talks to a researcher on the phone. And there's all these different ways they set up levels of being able to control that it can possibly be fraud, for instance, because it's so tightly controlled. So they go through this process. And so when I did my first reading, I went to a medium who had been certified by both these organizations. The other one's called the Forever Family Foundation. And they both have websites and are very wonderful organizations for people to look up who are interested in mediumship. So I wanted to find somebody who had passed these tests with flying colors and who had a good track record. And I was recommended to have a reading with Laura Lynn Jackson, who's a really, really great medium, and has since written a book, which some people may be familiar with. And she was amazing, and just amazing. It really was a fantastic experience for me to have that reading with her.
Okay, so with your friend, can you share something that came through? I mean, you said some was very personal, but what would have given you the thing that you needed that was legit?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, there's lots of facts that came through, you know, just what he did, when he died, how many kids he had, you know, all this kind of very accurate facts, what he did for a living, what our relationship was like, things about his family, et cetera, how he died, when he died. But there was one thing she said that really sort of got to me, which was so personal because one thing she did was describe his personality. So when he came in through to her, she described the way he was behaving, the way he felt, what his personality was like, and it was exactly right. And he would manifest in the way that he used to manifest when he was here. Mm-hmm. And the thing that he said, that so that part was really interesting also, but the thing that he said that it was really compelling to me was she said it was the first thing he said when he got through to her. She said, he said, "You were right. You were right." And I knew, right when she said that, I knew what it meant. But then Laura went on, she said, "I think he's talking about you were right about this reality, about the afterlife." And that's exactly what he was talking about. I knew that before she even said it. And it referenced the fact that when he was close to death, I had brought him over some books about evidence for the afterlife. And I thought, you know, he might be interested in them because he was, you know, making his transition. Right. And he was a very curious, very intelligent man who liked to read everything, just incredibly interested in learning and reading. And I thought, you know, my God, of course, you know, this is the moment to offer him these things. I brought him a couple of books over, very serious books. And I was shocked because he didn't want to read them. He said to me, you know, "I know that death is the end, and I just don't want to read these books." And so the first thing he said to me is, "You were right."
So yeah.
That was kind of one of those bullseye moments.
Apparently he read a few more things than he thought he needed to.
Exactly. And again, the thing about mediumship is when you have a mental mediumship reading, I mean, as far as the medium is concerned, and this is where the journalist comes through in me, you know, the medium is absolutely positive and that the person that is coming through is actually your deceased loved one who is communicating through her. I mean, especially Laura, she can even tell the difference when it's a deceased person as opposed to just her psychic abilities. But the question always arises if you're analyzing these readings as to whether all of it could potentially be coming just through the psychic abilities of the medium, through her telepathy and through her clairvoyance, that she just might be picking up on things from my mind, say.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, right. And so there's no way you can prove that it's not that. So there's sort of an open debate, you know, how do you discern? And I try to address that in my book, and I interview the mediums, and I try to show the difference between, and how do they know the difference between when they're actually bringing through somebody who's died versus using their own telepathy. But it's a very interesting question because you can't really objectively know for sure which one it is. You can argue it either way.
Okay, now did you feel a shift in the energy in the room? Did you feel a difference physically in any way, shape, or form?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I felt very affected. The first reading especially, I felt completely like my consciousness had changed from the beginning to the end. Because what I did is I taped the reading. So I told myself ahead of time, I'm not going to be sitting here as a journalist and trying to analyze everything as it goes along. I'm just going to enter into the reading as a human being in the way that I think will maximize it's working.
Yeah.
And to make it work, you know, because they say it has to do with energies and connections. So I spent a couple of days where I really focused on the two people that I wanted to have come through, and I sent them messages, you know, and did all the things that are not very journalistic, tried to ask them to come through and just be in a certain kind of a state of receptivity and openness to the process.
Yeah.
And so while I was having the reading, I was in that particular state. I knew that I could just do all the analysis later, so I'm just going to let go into this. And I did that, and I found myself to be completely just, you know, transformed and expanded by the experience. It was quite a long reading, and she said so many things that were meaningful and accurate that it did really change my state of mind. And it was only afterwards that I went back and took the tape and kind of picked through it all and, you know, graded the reading and figured out how many were correct and how many statements were incorrect and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the experience is absolutely wonderful, though, to have. Absolutely
okay.
Wonderful.
So, and that was with Laura Lynn Jackson.
That was with Laura Lynn Jackson. And I had a second reading with somebody named Sandra O'Hara, who's from Ireland. It was also exceptional reading. And she brought through a lot of the same information that Laura did. It was just, you know, the whole thing was so uncanny to me. I actually asked my two people, one of them was my friend and the other was my brother, after I had the reading with Laura, I asked them to please come through again with the second medium, whose name was Sandra. And by the way, Sandra and Laura didn't know each other. They had absolutely no knowledge of each other. So I made sure that there was no connection between them. And I asked my two people, again, behaving not like a journalist, but like a participant, to come through again for me. And I said, if it was really you, show me that and come through again. And I want you to say something exactly the same that you said before with Laura. I kept sending them this message. I'll know it's you. Just say something exactly the same. And they both did. They both did. And what was amazing about the statements that they made that were the same were that they were the most personal and most really evidential statements of both the readings, because they were something that nobody else could have known. And the statement I gave you earlier when my friend said, you were right. I mean, he came through with the first reading and said, you were right, twice. Exactly the same thing with the second reading. You were right, and he said it twice.
That's the code. Yeah, that's the code.
So, you know, my request was answered. Mm-hmm. You still could argue that it might not have, it could be telepathy.
Right.
You know, when you get objective about it. But it's still very mind-blowing to be sitting there. And, you know, the second medium, I mean, she didn't even know my name. She didn't know anything about me. She didn't know where on the whole planet Earth I lived. Mm-hmm. Nothing, because I sent her a fake name. And I took out a special email address with that fake name. I paid her on PayPal with that fake name. So she had absolutely knew nothing about me. And the accuracy of the information she brought through was just stunning. And when you're sitting there receiving it like that from somebody who doesn't even know your name, it's, you know, it's remarkable. You don't, you know, you have to deal with it. You have to realize it. Yeah.
Yeah, that goes into a larger way of looking at us as more conscious than physical. We're not stuck right here in this physical form. There's some connection on another level where we have information or access to it if you are trained or if you have that aptitude.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing that interests me as a journalist, you know, is I know that this happens, but there, when you think about all the scientists that deny that psychic abilities even exist, and yet you sit down and have a reading like that where something is going on with that, with consciousness here that we don't understand, and the scientific community will deny the reality of it. That, to me, is partly what motivated me to write the book, because I want the message to be out there that this is reality. This happens. What does it mean? Science can't explain it.
I like the story that's coming out now with the Third Eye Spies. And Hal Puthoff, I think, is one of the people who gave you on your book a review that says, it's a positive review. I don't have it right in front of me.
Right. Yeah, he loved the book. Loved it.
Yeah, and these are guys who should know better, if there's anything to know better about.
Exactly. And he's a scientist, of course, that studied remote viewing. He's been open to this reality, you know, but he's extremely rigorous and scientific about it. So, you know, there are scientists out there that do take this stuff seriously, but it's sort of not part of the cultural, you know, the general perspective that lies within the study of science and the natural world. There's just so much that science doesn't understand yet about the way reality works and the forces that exist, whatever they are, the forces or the energies or aspects of consciousness, whatever you want to call them, that manifest in our world and that we can't explain. And, you know, I feel fascinated by such things and want to understand them better. So,
well, one of the topics you go into, and I was curious about this because I actually tried to contact Jim Tucker and he's like overwhelmed, but it has to do with the reincarnation, Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker, who's now taken the reins on that. At least that was my latest information.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is stuff that, there are so many ways that these children or people who have experiences have specific information they should not have in any way, shape, or form, and there's still a denial that somehow this is an imagination.
I know. I mean, it is. It's crazy. I mean, I really don't think, because I've looked at two cases in my book of young children with very specific memories. I don't think that anybody could read those chapters and argue that these could be fantasies. It's just, you know, if they can, they just can't have any brains in their head and argue that, because, as you say, the memories are very, very specific. And in one case, the child was only 2 years old, just learning to talk. And between the time of 2 and 3, he provided specific names, locations, specific airplane that he was flying in World War II, is what he remembered being a World War II pilot, the specific location of where his death occurred. This was a child that had never been exposed to anything, no, you know, any geography or nothing about airplanes or World War II or anything, and yet he came out with these specific things. So you can't argue that that's fantasy, especially when those specific things end up being related to a specific individual. So when you can solve what we call solving a case like that, means that you actually get enough specific information from that child to be able to locate, whether it be through records or archives or family members or whatever, you know, you find out that that person actually did exist. And that the things the child said about them are completely right, are accurate.
Now, wasn't this James Leininger?
James Leininger. The pilot who he remembered being died, I think it was about 50 years before he was born. You know, and they had no relationship. He had no relationship to the family of the previous personality. So you have to ask yourself, I don't know how one can explain that.
No,
the child says he was that person, and not only does he have the memories, but he had all kinds of emotional reactions, including horrifying nightmares in which he relived over and over again his death, which was when he was hit by the Japanese and crashed in his plane, and his plane caught on fire. And he relived that countless times, screaming in terror during the night, until eventually he was able to describe what it was. But when he was so little, he could barely talk about it. So it's terrifying for the parents, but the point is that the memories were accurate, and they were detailed, as you raised. You know, that's the point you raised. And so for somebody to read that and say, well, it was just the child fantasizing, it doesn't make any sense, especially when all the details prove to be accurate to the life of the person that child says he was.
The person who's fantasizing there is not the child, okay? Just, a point in...
the reader is the one fantasizing. The person that cannot accept that this could be possible, they have to find some way of writing it off.
Well, and that's part of it, though. Even when, like Michael Shermer, he had an incredible experience, and he was as skeptic as you can get that this is absolutely fabrication. Nothing like this can ever happen, until he got married and he had an experience with his wife. They had an experience where all of a sudden a transistor radio that was an heirloom, it was something, I believe, I'm talking off the cuff here, but from her grandfather, and the thing played music. And she said, oh my gosh, that's my grandpa. And of course, she was supposedly a skeptic too. And the two of them had to figure out how that one was going to be.
I know, that's fascinating, because he actually published an article about that in the Scientific American, and I got recently on my Facebook page. I thought it was absolutely brilliant that he was willing to acknowledge it. And his experience was not that dramatic. I mean, there are people that have experiences that are way more dramatic than what happened to him. So you have to wonder what would happen to these skeptics or these debunkers who had even more dramatic experiences than that. And the problem is most of them haven't, and they haven't put themselves in situations to test this stuff like I did.
Well, part of it is with that, I respected him more when he was willing to say, I am objective. It did happen. And he had to come to terms of, because in terms of being a skeptic, that's somebody who absolutely has complete and total denial. So there is no possibility. When if you are a scientist has to remain open to the possibility. And that's where we learn, when we're open. And that's what you're doing. You're going through this whole thing, a scenario of, as a real person, as a, you know, I don't know one way or the other, what's going to happen? And so you open yourself, and there's that window for the experience and the interaction. That's what that's reality.
Exactly. That's wonderful. And I fully respect, you know, genuine skepticism. I respect, as long as the person has an open mind. I was a skeptic when I started out on this studying a lot of this stuff. So skepticism is fine, but then there's a difference between debunking something and being a skeptic. But anyway, I completely agree with you that I respect him a great deal also for saying that, and I guess he's really an honest person, or he wouldn't have mentioned that experience. So
he wouldn't have laid himself. Yeah, he wouldn't have laid himself out for the criticism.
Exactly. So I thought that was wonderful to read. Absolutely wonderful.
Okay, we're going to come back. I want to talk about the out-of-body stuff, the near-death experiences, and Pim Van Lommel. Okay, so
sure.
Just hang on there. And you're listening. This is the newest book out from Leslie Kane, Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife, next on Conscious Living.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing on a summer night. It's pajamas with feet and everybody over for Sunday dinner. And that old stuffed chair in the living room you just can't get rid of. This is why you work a second job. This is why you learn to fix things yourself so you can save on repairs. Because home is your place, your memories, your family sleeping in their own beds at night. And that is why we want to help. We are making Home Affordable, a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. And now even more options are available. Call 888-995-HOPE today. That's 888-995-HOPE. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
There's a natural resource that exists everywhere on the planet which could benefit all of civilization. Yet it's been largely ignored. That resource is women. In many of the world's poorest communities, women are denied a significant role. So often their talent and potential remain untapped. At CARE, we found in country after country that empowering women is one of the fastest ways to improve conditions and help end poverty. That's why CARE is helping provide girls and women with an education, opportunity, and a voice worldwide.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
It's a source of power the world can no longer afford to overlook. She has the power to change her world. You have the power to help her do it. Call 1-800-521-CARE or visit care.org.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Hi there. Thanks for tuning in. It's Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. My guest, Leslie Kane. And this is, I think, you know, for a lot of people, becoming more comfortable for us to talk about without immediately going, oh, no, shh, don't. You're going to scare me. Like your friend who was going to cross over. Like, no. I don't need that. I've been there, done that. Nothing happened. No big deal.
I think it's true. And I think presenting factual information, which was what I've done in my book, makes it even more accessible to people. It's not, you know, it's just pretty straightforward. It's just for straightforward data, basically. It's how they interpret it that's the issue.
Well, okay. So from there, going into some of the after death, you know, near-death experiences. What was the most profound one that you came across?
Well, I think that there's lots of very profound near-death experiences. I think in terms of evidence, though, what I, you know, as a journalist, what I'm really interested in are what we call veridical OBEs, experience with where people have no brain activity, no heartbeat. They're essentially dead. I mean, they call it clinical death. Mm-hmm. They are being resuscitated. They're having a heart attack, something like that. And they actually experience themselves in a different part of the room, like up on the ceiling. And what's important about these events is when they come back, they are actually able to report to the doctors what they heard and what they saw when they experienced themselves as out of their bodies. And what these are so evidential because, you know, if they were brain dead, they had no brain activity. So how were they able to observe and hear these things? And what it does is it gives us hard evidence of the fact that they did have this perception, even though they were not supposed to have it, according to what science would say. And the fact that they can tell us, and then the doctors can verify, well, you know, in one case, a man was up at the ceiling and he reported hearing the sound of this machine. And he described what that sound was like. And the doctors knew that machine, they knew the intervals that the machine went off, so they knew how long he was out of his body. And they knew when he was out of his body because the use of the machine correlated with his being completely gone, having no brain. So, you know, that's really evidential because if he's telling us what he perceived and we can verify that he's accurate, then what was going on? He perceived himself as being out of his body. Was he? And if he was, then we know that consciousness can function independently of the brain. And that's a really important kind of initial step towards the possibility that we survive after death. If consciousness can function independently of the brain, then maybe when our body dies, our consciousness can continue to function. That's what it suggests.
Well, see, that part of it, I think there's still a little bit of wiggle room between the death phase and the coma or, you know, something that there's still some question as to how to define that.
Right. That's right. True. There are more and more people thinking that boundary is not as clear cut as they might think. You know,
consciousness.
You know, how do you know when someone's actually dead or not?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring one, 90 Minutes in Heaven. This is a movie that's easily accessible, you know, or read the book. And it's about a minister who was on his way to a function and was hit by a semi and supposedly dead for 90 minutes. No pulse. They thought he was dead. They didn't want to, you know, check out because he was dead and somebody else stood over him and prayed for him. And then he said, hey, he's not dead. He's alive. But his story of recovering and what he remembered and wanting to leave because of what he experienced, the consciousness, something happened to him during that experience, during that moment or that time when they thought that he wasn't there and they didn't get a pulse and they couldn't, you know, couldn't believe that someone that they had diagnosed as being gone could come right back. These stories, I think, are what people are hearing more and more of and questioning how we can actually make an accurate diagnosis. You don't want to bury somebody who's alive.
Exactly. And, the scary thing is about that is that, I'm particularly interested in the work of Dr. Sam Parnia, who's the director of resuscitation research at Stony Brook University in New York. He works with, resuscitation science, and he has discovered that people can be, quote, dead for hours, literally hours, and still come back. And he has actually renamed this experience. He calls it an actual death experience, not a near-death experience, because he says we don't really have a clear definition of what near-death means. As far as he's concerned, these people are actually dead. They can be, and they come back, but they might be dead for 2 or 3 hours. And it didn't used to be, science used to believe that you could only survive, you know, a short time and you couldn't come back. But he's discovered that when the body temperature is lowered, that's when these people are able to be brought back after a long period of time. The body temperature drops. If somebody falls into an icy stream or something like that, they can be brought back after a long period of time. And the point is, he doesn't make a distinction between the condition they were in and the condition that somebody is in who doesn't come back. As far as he's concerned, they're all dead. They're dead people. He says, you know, they describe these people as like a corpse. There's no difference.
Right. Yeah, there's one, it's a famous a Russian dissident, and I just talked with PMH Atwater about this. And yeah. The deal was, the name, I'm trying to read it here real quick, Rodnaya. He was dead for 3 days in the morgue, 3 days waiting to be taken care of, and he woke up during the autopsy. And the deal is that when you die, I didn't know this until she explained it, your tongue swells up. There's no way he could say anything, but his eyes kept opening, and then they kept going, and he opened them again. And finally, when his eyes didn't shut again, they realized, oh my gosh, oh, and took care of him. It required a few surgeries to bring him back to normal in terms of what they had done, and they were trying to do the autopsy. But it was 3 days in the morgue. For
That's
him.
Unbelievable. I never heard that story. Unbelievable. I wonder how the doctors felt who were doing the autopsy.
One of them
imagine?
Yeah, a vacation for a month because it was so disturbing. The story is fantastic. That's one that she's been doing this research for 40 years, and because of her own near-death experiences. And so that was one I thought was fascinating, because not only did he have that experience, he had a lot of stuff that he saw as he was out and about while he was, you know, taking a little vacation from the corporeal form.
Right. And so was he able to come back and report accurate information that, you know, that he observed when he was out of his body?
That is what is said. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's one of those that... and the thing too, he was also an atheist.
Wow. I guess I changed for him. Well, I think you can believe in a spiritual reality and still be an atheist in a sense, like the man you talked about earlier. I mean, atheism, if you're talking specifically about believing in the traditional concept of God, that's a different thing. You can still be in a spiritual reality and maybe still be an atheist. I don't know.
Well, I think part of it was that there is nothing next. There is no after. There's no in between. This is, you are in the dirt, and that's it. It's done. It's over. And so when they get this still going on, it's like, maybe I need to.
It's a really shocking story, though. My God.
And that one's, you can look that one up. You can verify it if you're listening, because that's just one of those. It has so much content to it, especially with him describing what was happening and then why he. You know, why he felt, and afterwards, you know, that it changed his life. So that happens. And, you know, when you're writing about this in your book, from a journalist advantage, you don't have to believe it. You're looking at it and saying, well, what would make me not believe this? Where would the big but I don't think so come in?
Mm-hmm.
People look for. It's like, well, how can you give me a reason to believe? Give me an evidence, something that's, you know, tangible that we can put it on paper and say that this is real. What do you think of all your research was the most, I guess, in terms of what we would think, logical sustenance or substantiative? I'll get that word right. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, and, you know, they're from lots of different areas, too, of investigation. And I think we've already mentioned the cases of these young children, where you have outside investigators involved documenting everything. So those cases have been written up and published, and we have these incredible cases of veridical OBEs that we were just talking about, people leaving their bodies, coming back, reporting what they see. I'm also really interested in physical mediumship and situations where phenomena occur that science just cannot explain, such as levitations, the movement of objects through psychokinesis, even materializations. And even those have been documented over, you know, many years ago, but nonetheless, valid scientific papers written by astute scientists who tested mediums under very, very rigorous and controlled conditions, people that we can trust, that know how to do investigations. And there are some fascinating papers that have been published documenting what goes on with some of these mediums and the physical level that that occurred in such controlled conditions that there's no way they could have been faked. So those papers really were an inspiration to me. And then I had the experience of sitting with a physical medium myself, which was another very interesting journey that I went on.
Okay, give a definition for that, because this is still going to be new terminology.
Absolutely. I mean, physical mediums are people who go into a trance state. They're in a room. We call it a seance, although that word has sort of weird connotations. But That's the word they use. They're in a group, usually with a small group of people, and they will go into a complete trance state, which means that they're basically asleep. They're completely unconscious. And the way they describe it is that while they're in that state, they're kind of vacating their bodies and what they call their spirit controls, which would be some kind of a spiritual entity. It would be some entity that was once alive and is now in the spirit world, will actually come into their bodies and speak through them and sort of take over their bodies. And when that happens, there's all kinds of physical phenomena that can occur that are facilitated by the spirit beings that are in the body of the physical medium. There could be more than one. They can come and go, and they can make these physical phenomena occur that people can witness over and over and over again so that they can be documented. They can be seen by groups of people. Nobody's making them up. You know, they're physical, they're able to be seen and felt. And among them are, like what I said. So that's sort of that's the atmosphere in which these things happen. And the medium that I sat with, him and doing this for probably 30 or 40 years, sitting with the same small group and just quietly developing his mediumship. And what they say the purpose of it is to show people that we survive death, that these beings are speaking to us from the other side, and they are doing it because they want people to understand that life goes on after you leave your bodies. So you can interpret it however you want, but that's the scenario that they present for people. There are many fraudulent ones. I'm sure people are thinking, oh, my God, yeah, sure. You know, parlor games or cheating or whatever. Certainly there are many mediums that are questionable, and there certainly were in the heyday of this, which was in the 1920s and 30s. But that doesn't mean all of them are. Just like with UFOs, there's lots of sightings that we can explain, but there's those gems that we can't explain. Well, here it's the same thing. There are some physical mediums that are well tested and that are genuine and can perform these amazing feats inside the seance room that can be witnessed by lots of people.
Well, part of it too is it's you need to do your own due diligence and discern whether this is something that's relevant to you and if somebody else is trying to take advantage of you. And usually those people want you to come back over and over and over again, or they have a very high fee and there's something that they're getting a bigger benefit than you are.
Right. And especially the ones that travel around and charge a lot of money. I mean, they have a right to make a living, but you know, that's always a sort of added difficulty when you're trying to to investigate a medium, is if they're making a lot of money over it, then they have an incentive to possibly try to fool people. But the medium that I sat with, Stuart Alexander, who's in England, does not charge any money and just sits with his small group year after year. And he's not sitting there faking phenomena with the same intimate group of people with no outsiders coming in. I mean, it's just, you know, he doesn't do that. But they have visitors that will come, and he has one purpose and one purpose only, which is to give them the message that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you have to know how to find the right people.
Like with you doing this book, I do believe that you were guided and you were led to people who would help you bring this message out. That's the way I believe, because I think when we are trying to, you know, go to the source and work on whatever it is, our project, our job, our mission, then this stuff opens up and I find the right web page at the right time with the right author and the right little piece of information that fits right in. And when I'm in sync, then those things just, they're very easy and they just fall right into place. If I'm going against the grain, it won't be so easy. But I do, in my own way of manifesting the universe, see that you follow this same kind of inspiration, and you obviously can get some really good content out of that, I think, as a talent, an ability, a skill. And that's why you do what you do.
Well, thank you for that. You may be right. I don't know. But thank you for that anyway.
See, you're objective. That's the whole point. It's like, okay, the jury's out. We'll find out. But that's
right.
The point. You know, it's just the only way we learn is by allowing ourselves to be, to suspend the disbelief, to be, I think, in some way willing to say, what if, instead of absolutely not, what if, and then what follows, and go from there to research it.
Yeah. Definitely, and I think that's a good point.
The overview from this, was there one avenue, one element, one aspect that really hit you harder, you know, and you thought this is why I did the book?
Well, that's a good question. Why I did the book is I think I feel more satisfaction for that when somebody reads it and tells me, oh, this has really changed my life, or oh, this helped me deal with the recent death. I had a colleague who had lost an adult child, which is one of the more devastating things I think that can happen to anybody. And this person was actually a scientist, and they told me that this book just was transformative for them. Because it affected their ability to deal with their grief. And when I heard that, I immediately thought, this is why I wrote the book. If I can impact people's lives that way with this information, then that's my motivation for doing it, is to be helpful to people. So things like that are really satisfying to me when it actually has a personal impact on someone.
Okay, so after this contact with your friend, has anything happened since then?
I don't know. You mean to that friend? To the friend?
No, to you. Because if the person that you lost and mm-hmm. you connected with through the two mediums, have you noticed anything in your life where there's any other kind of connect or any other kind of paranormal element that is just kind of, you know, tagging you going, ha, 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 ha?
Yeah, I mean, this is another section of my book. There were a series of after-death communications that occurred, which I experienced this coming from my brother, not my friend. Mm-hmm. And I do write about these in the book as well. I feel, again, you know, it's very personal, but I felt I needed to include them because they were part of my exploration. And I do write about them, and I talk about how they can be interpreted, but there were a series of paranormal experiences I had that seemed to be communications. Now, they could have been self-generated, but they involved physical phenomena and things like that. So that's a whole other component, and I do have a section that talks about the research into these kinds of experiences and other people's experiences as well, which are very compelling. I think a lot of people have had after-death communications from dead, you know, from people they've lost. I think it's quite common.
Yeah, I think sometimes it frightens people because they're not expecting that, or especially if they've had some kind of a religious background that says this isn't good and it's not really your relative, then that makes it a little more problematic. But I do think, and I've experienced it myself, that when someone transits, then there is that open window. Somebody saying, hey, it's all right, I'm okay. And most of the time, that's really what the message is. It's like, don't worry, it'll be okay when it's your turn too. I'm just giving you a heads up, you know.
Exactly, or I'm letting you know that I'm still with you.
Yeah.
You know, there's sort of this sense of a penetration into the physical world from something that's not physical. And it actually, that energy affects the physical world. And you can observe it, and there's some force that's creating something. Again, it's the same thing. There's a force that we don't understand. There's some that can create these physical effects. And when they're very personally very personally connected for you, mm-hmm. they're extremely meaningful and powerful. More powerful than research would be, even if the research is more evidential, really, is more objective.
There's nothing like personal
experience.
Absolutely. Believing is seeing. It's seeing is believing. Those kinds of things, when it resonates and it changes your perception because you have just had an encounter, an engagement, and then nobody can take that away from you. They can't say it didn't happen because you felt it. You just have to figure out how to reconcile it at that point.
Exactly. And it's not like you can ever prove it to anybody else either. But I'm hoping that the readers of the book will understand that I'm extremely rigorous, and you know, I'm an objective journalist basically, and I'm not making up things. I mean, you know, I wouldn't dream of misleading anybody. It just completely violates everything that I stand for. So I hope that as people read the book, they will develop enough confidence in my objectivity that they can accept what I tell them happened, that it actually did happen. I mean, there's, of course, no question in my mind about it.
But, well,
you know,
but I think,
you know, yeah.
you've covered a lot of topics. You've covered a lot of ground. And that's what helps too. It isn't just a one, okay, I'm going to go visit a medium and then we're going to, you know, dissect that. You've tried to include things like the near-death experience, the afterlife experience, the reincarnation, the working with a medium who is trying to make material things appear, you know, the knocking right. that we did into that. But, you know, some of the other paranormal elements that go along with this that also make people think twice about what is real and what is this about?
Exactly. And I find those questions to be so compelling. I like grappling with those questions myself, and I'm hoping that other people do too.
Okay. So did this get you a little bit curious about doing another book on this one? Or I know you've got a plan B.
I can't think about another book right now, but I do know that there was so much that I had to leave out of this book, and I want to tell people that I have extensive endnotes in the back of the book, and I'm hoping that they will expand their knowledge of what I've written by going to some of these other, you know, other information, papers, and so on that I do cite in the back of the book. I'm going to also be posting a lot more research and additional information on my website, which is survivingdeathkane.com. It's surviving death and then my name, KEAN.com. And so I think your point is really good, that there's so much information here that people need to have access to. And in one book, I just couldn't include it all. So I'm going to expand. My website's going to be kind of an educational place where people can come. And if there's a particular section of the book that interests them, you know, or connects to them in some way, that hopefully I'll have additional information on the website that they can read, and links and so on, and videos and things that they can use to expand what they've read in the book.
And it's got UFOs.
What's that?
And it's got UFOs.
The website has the UFO book on it too. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't get into that, but were there any UFO kind of connections in your book? Could you see in that at all, or was that's another book, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't see much of a connection, although I think some people are making some kinds of connections between this. I mean, the only connection I really see is just that they're both big mysteries. You know, one of them is the mystery of the universe. The other is the mystery of our consciousness. And maybe there's some connection to them, but I so far, I haven't really made that connection myself. I look at them as separate topics.
Okay, well, then let's give you a homework assignment.
Okay. I'm open to that.
We want you to connect some dots, the paranormal element and what happens, because the UFO sightings often include this paranormal element. So could that involve a supernatural equation? Is there something else with our consciousness that's above both of these particular events that says, hey, you know, this is on the first stage, this is on the second stage, and now you're seeing behind the curtain of what's going on here. And it's, you know, UFOs are just trying to get us to think in bigger, in bigger ballparks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting point. You know, my book of UFOs, again, I was very focused on sort of the physicality of the phenomenon,
yes.
and the data, you know, and the radar traces and what the generals are saying and what the airline pilots have seen and so on, to try to sort of establish the reality of a physical phenomenon that definitely exists. So I haven't focused much on the paranormal aspects of the experiences that people have. That's sort of been outside my area of study.
Yeah.
So that may be one reason why I'm not making as much of a connection, because of my orientation towards it. But that doesn't mean that those connections don't exist.
I'm telling you, that's a deep well, okay?
Yeah. No, I can hear you. I hear
well.
You.
Do some spelunking or cave diving or, you know, whatever it is. And but I like the way that you've approached this. You've given a lot more, I think, you know, connections instead of just going at the near-death aspect, trying to figure out by drawing a few other elements into it with the reincarnation and some of the things that you personally experienced. I think that just helps add a little bit more credence to it. It says, okay, you went in with an open mind and this happened without you expecting anything, without you trying to manufacture anything. There it is. And that's
right.
What happens.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I never would have expected to have the experiences that I had. Absolutely not. And it did. It just added so much to my whole journey into this material. And to have the combination of the research that I can provide and the, you know, the factual information and the chapters written by some of the experts in the field and some experiencers, all of that, in combination with my own personal experiences, are really wonderful. A wonderful mix, I think.
Well, it gives
wonderful,
a broader base.
Yeah.
A broader base. So if you're listening, again, you can go to her site, and that will give you a whole lot more connections with the books that she's written. And I wanted to give that the woman that you went to, I think Laura Lynn Jackson.
Jackson. She actually has a book. It's called The Light Between Us, and it did very well. I think it came out last year. And she has a website. And then the other medium that I would highly recommend is Sandra O'Hara. She's from Ireland. She also has a website.
Okay. So if you're listening, SurvivingDeathKane.com is the website for more information on this. And we're going to be talking again in a short while here for Wendy's Coffee House. So I'm looking forward to, I'm probably going to ask you a few different questions. Hopefully.
Okay, well, that sounds great, Wendy. I sure appreciate talking to you. It was really, really interesting to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your work. Okay, so.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Have a fabulous day and stay curious. There's so much going on here we don't have answers for. That's what makes it fun. Till next time. See ya.